the Rohingya crisis has become the new narrative between Myanmar and the international community.
Rohingya repatriation plans in question. It's Wednesday, July 31st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to follow us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, VOA reaches out to Rohingya. Southeast Asia at a greater malaria risk. The business of tech trade and Indonesia ride sharing. Democrats for president and the weight of smartphones. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A Myanmar government delegation met with representatives of hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslim refugees in Bangladesh this past weekend to discuss creating conditions for their safe repatriation. Myanmar's permanent foreign secretary, U Myint Tho, led a 10-member delegation for the talks in refugee camps in Bangladesh's Cox's Bazar region. He said he told the refugees about the preparations being made for their repatriation and agreed to continue talks with them. Buddhist majority, Myanmar has long considered the Rohingya to be Bengalis from Bangladesh, even though their families have lived in the country for generations. Nearly all have been denied citizenship since 1982, effectively rendering them stateless, and they are also denied freedom of movement and other basic rights. Phil Robertson is deputy director of Human Rights Watch's Asia Division. He has quite a few questions and doubts about the repatriation plans. He spoke with VOA's Ira Melman via Skype from the Myanmar capital of Naypyidaw.
Myanmar wants to get the Rohingya back. Right now, it is essentially playing games with the discussions about citizenship. The Rohingya have set out a number of key requirements before they consider going back. One is citizenship, the second is security, and third is a respect for their rights when they go back. The problem on the citizenship issue is that they don't trust the Myanmar government's promises. They want to have citizenship outright. The Myanmar government is saying you're going to have to go through the various different processes of the 1982 Citizenship Act, of which there are several different forms of naturalization, and that maybe you'll get it. That's not good enough for the Rohingya because it's just going back to the same situation that they have faced for years. And there's a number of them who said, well, you know, look, before 1982, we had citizenship. Or, subsequently, right after 1982, we had a card that was better than what you're offering us now. We're not going to go back for that kind of arrangement where we have no guarantee of long-term stability nor presence in the country, which we call home.
Why does Myanmar want them back?
Well, Myanmar is facing a lot of international pressure. I think that the Rohingya crisis has become the new narrative between Myanmar and the international community. That Myanmar is being expected to solve this. Myanmar is expected to come up with solutions for these people to go back. Certainly, Bangladesh is very unhappy having all these people in their country. It was sort of understood between Bangladesh and the international community that Bangladesh would open its borders, take these people, which was an important humanitarian step. It was an important human rights step for Bangladesh to take. But the idea was that they were going to be there for a period of time and then they'd be going back. Now Bangladesh is seeing that this may be open-ended and these people may be there indefinitely. And they're very unhappy about that, and there's a lot of pressure, not only through the UN, but through the OIC and others on Myanmar that, you need to fulfill your promise and take these people back one way or another.
Are they willing to take the next step and grant full citizenship to the returning Rohingya if they choose to come back?
Well, we have not seen that political commitment. To be honest, we have our doubts. What we have seen, given the way they treat the over 120,000 Rohingya who are IDPs, internally displaced persons, still in Rakhine State. These are people who are displaced in 2012. These are people who are essentially locked down in camps. They're unable to move. They're unable to pursue livelihoods or have access to basic services like health and education. And they haven't gotten citizenship. Even in the cases of some IDP camps, which are not in central Rakhine, but in the northern part of central Rakhine State, you know, there are a number of ethnic Kaman Muslims, and the Kaman Muslims are considered citizens of Myanmar, but they're still not able to leave the camps. So, you know, there's a lot of I think a big disparity between what the government of Myanmar is promising and what they're actually doing on the ground. And these refugees in Bangladesh are in touch with the Rohingya who are still in Rakhine State. They, you know, they converse by WhatsApp and these other phone messaging apps. So they know what's going on, and they know that nothing has changed on the ground that would lead them to believe that they're going to get a better deal or that their security is going to be guaranteed.
So what kind of reception have the representatives from Myanmar gotten as they go into the camps in Bangladesh?
Well, I think they're being listened to by the Rohingya. Certainly the Rohingya are turning up to see what they have to say. I mean, these are closed-door meetings. It's not every representative in the camp that's getting in there. I mean, it's the leaders of the Rohingya in the camps that are invited. I think that the Rohingya understand that they have to be polite to this delegation, in part because Bangladesh expects them to be. Bangladesh wants these discussions to succeed. And if you know, the Rohingya go against what Bangladesh wants, then they could face a real problem.
We've already talked about citizenship, but security is something else you mentioned. How can the security be secured for the Rohingya?
It's a very good question, and we're not seeing the kind of international guarantees the Rohingya say they want before they're prepared to go back. I mean, some of the Rohingya are saying that they want to have UN peacekeepers. I don't think that's likely because obviously Myanmar would never accept them. But, you know, even international humanitarians and UN agency officials can't go to some of these areas that the Rohingya would be returning to. There's no access whatsoever. So there needs to be some degree of international monitoring. There has to be some sort of deal. I think without some security guarantees, the Rohingya won't move because the Rohingya are very acutely aware that, you know, if they go back without security guarantees, they're basically placing their fates back in the hands of the military and the police who 2 years ago were raping and killing them.
Phil Robertson of Human Rights Watch, Asia Division. The long-simmering Rohingya crisis exploded in August 2017 when Myanmar's military launched what it called a clearance campaign in Rakhine State in response to an attack by a Rohingya insurgent group. The campaign caused more than 700,000 Rohingya to flee to overcrowded refugee camps in neighboring Bangladesh and elsewhere for safety. There are conflicting reports about how the Rohingya reacted to the visit by the Myanmar officials, but it seems that the talks between Myanmar and Rohingya leaders will be extended. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. Report of riot charges prompts sudden protest in Hong Kong. Trump warns China to negotiate trade deal now rather than later. Chinese officials defend treatment of Muslim minority amid international scrutiny. Top diplomats gather in Bangkok for key Asia-Pacific talks. India criminalizes ancient practice of instant divorce among Muslims. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more at Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Voice of America has begun a daily radio show in Rohingya, the language spoken by Muslim refugees who have been forced to flee Myanmar. The program is called Lifeline, as we hear VOA director Amanda Bennett describe it to Ira Melman.
We started a brand new 30-minute a day weekly program that's aimed at serving the Rohingya refugees who are in refugee camps based in Bangladesh. When I went to Bangladesh to visit the camps about a year ago, I realized with my team that there's almost no source of objective, truthful news and information that the Rohingya refugees can count on. So that's one of the reasons we decided to start it.
How do you zero in on these refugee camps technically? How does that work?
There's many different ways you can get transmissions and information into the refugee camps. What we're using is really old school right now. We're using shortwave, which is what VOA was traditionally, 50, 70 years ago, based on. It happens to work very well and has a very strong signal that can reach into the camps. And the refugees have access to radios that have been provided to them via various human rights groups, aid groups, so they can listen to the transmissions, and oftentimes they listen to them in groups.
What have they been listening to that you felt such a program was necessary?
When I was there, I observed groups of refugees listening to the types of broadcasts that were available, and they're very good, they're very useful, but they're very, very much public service kind of announcements. Here's how to tie your tarps down in the monsoon season. Don't let your kids play in muddy waters near the latrines. Be sure and get your shots. They were very, very practical, life-based things, and this is instead going to be international news and information, plus interviews with refugees and actual stories about their concerns and their lives.
And again, what is the overall goal of doing this?
Well, because there's no news and information available, it's the same goal that has driven Voice of America since our very beginning. Our very first broadcast was behind Nazi lines into Germany to give information to people who had no other way of getting it. So we want to make sure that these refugees have at least some access to news and information, because otherwise they don't know about whether they can trust the rumors that are spreading through the camp, or know whether or not recruiters are actually offering them jobs in the Philippines, or they really are sex traffickers. They don't have any really objective way to understand what's really going on.
So they're getting some fake news.
They're getting fake news, and they're getting it by word of mouth, basically, and through people who are spreading fake news.
Who is doing these programs for VOA?
So it's based in our Bangla service, because we need to transmit via Bangladesh, because that's where the refugees are. We've hired native Rohingya speakers, two of them here in Washington and two of them in the camps, to produce the shows in the Rohingya language. So every day it's produced by these four people under the supervision of the Bangla service. You know, this is something that VOA staffers have been particularly passionate about, because so many of the people who work for VOA are themselves refugees. So they have a very instinctive understanding of the refugee experience and how starved people in the camps are for information. So it's been a very, very great passion project for a lot of people here.
VOA Director Amanda Bennett on the Voice of America's new outreach to Rohingya refugees. Happening now in Asia, India and Pakistani soldiers traded heavy gunfire across a ceasefire line dividing Kashmir between the hostile neighbors. Officials said the exchange left one Indian soldier and one Pakistani civilian dead, several others wounded. Pakistan's military accused Indian troops of resorting to unprovoked firing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The most effective drug used to treat malaria is becoming ineffective in parts of Southeast Asia, and unless rapid action is taken, it could lead to a global health emergency, according to scientists. Writing in The Lancet Journal, researchers from Thailand's Mahidol University and Britain's Oxford University say parasites that carry malaria are developing resistance to a key drug combination across multiple regions of Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, and Vietnam. Henry Ridgewell reports.
The report warns that the parasite Plasmodium falciparum, which causes the most lethal form of human malaria, is becoming resistant to the first-choice drug, DHA piperaquine, in parts of Southeast Asia, with patients seeing a failure rate of 50% or more. The situation is so critical that scientists say the treatment should not be used in Cambodia, Vietnam, and northeast Thailand because it is ineffective and contributes to increased malaria transmission. New treatments must be considered, says Sturgios Mostios of the University of Northumbria.
It might be opportune at this point in time to explore whether or not we should bring together different new classes of medications so that when the problem starts becoming more substantial, there is a solution potentially that works at the multi-drug level.
The report says urgent action is now needed to eliminate falciparum malaria from the region. Otherwise, the resistant strains of the parasite could further spread to other parts of Asia, potentially causing a global health emergency.
The likely scenario will be that improvement of healthcare on a day-to-day basis will create the opportunity for the parasite to evolve resistance.
Currently, malaria vaccine trials are underway, but drug combinations like DHA piperaquine remain vital in treating malaria, especially in countries with poor health systems. Since 2014, global progress against malaria has stalled. There were an estimated 219 million cases and 435,000 related deaths in 2017. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Coming up, big tech seeks big exemptions. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump wants combat forces reduced in Afghanistan by the next U.S. presidential election. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo presented the president's desire in comments that underlined the growing pressure from Washington to cut troop numbers there. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for these and much more stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the trade war closes in on big tech while Indonesian ride-sharing accelerates. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Apple could soon be facing tariffs on components of its MacBook Pro computers if it manufactures them in China. The company had asked for an exemption on tariffs, but in a tweet, U.S. President Donald Trump said no. Mr. Trump has placed tariffs on $250 billion worth of Chinese goods being imported into the United States. A U.S. company can ask for an exemption from those tariffs, but it has to show that its products cannot be made within the United States. Apple, Dell, HP, Intel, Microsoft, and Sony are just some of the companies that have asked that their products be excluded from tariffs. Apple says that despite this latest tariff threat, it still plans on manufacturing its new MacBook Pro in China. The computer accounts for only a small portion of Apple's overall business. Bringing manufacturing back to the United States has been one of Trump's primary goals in the administration's ongoing trade war with China, in addition to reducing the trade deficit and protecting U.S. intellectual property. While U.S. and Chinese trade representatives are meeting this week in Shanghai to negotiate, expectations for a substantive long-term solution to the trade dispute remain low. Southeast Asian ride-hailing firm Grab said that it will invest $2 billion into Indonesia over 5 years using capital received from Japanese technology investor SoftBank Group. Grab says that the investment will go towards building a transportation network around electric vehicles, improving digital infrastructure for important services like healthcare, and creating a second headquarters in Jakarta. SoftBank chief executive Masayoshi Son hinted that the bank's investment in Indonesia could even go beyond the $2 billion. Masayoshi Son.
We will create a second headquarter of Grab in Indonesia and become a fifth unicorn. And also invest $2 billion through Grab But then on top of that, we will invest more into Indonesia.
The six-year-old Grab now operates in approximately 200 cities in Indonesia, the Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Singapore. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news break from VOA Asia, top diplomats from the Asia-Pacific region started gathering in Bangkok to discuss issues of concern to the area, including security on the Korean Peninsula and China's territorial claims in the South China Sea. Thai officials say there will be 27 meetings through Saturday among the 31 countries participating. Gather with us daily on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Democratic Party presidential candidates will again try to distance themselves from their rivals as they jockey for position in another round of Democratic debates, this time in Detroit. Mike O'Sullivan reports that progressive standard bearers Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren will share the stage Tuesday. Frontrunner Joe Biden will fend off attacks Wednesday as 10 of 20 candidates square off on each of the two nights.
With a clear but shrinking lead in the polls, former Vice President Biden, with other candidates, paid visits last week to African-American civil rights groups. Still dominating the news were comments by U.S. President Donald Trump aimed at four minority members of Congress, which Democrats widely criticized as racist. Race became an issue in the Democratic contest when California Senator Kamala Harris questioned Biden's record in debates in Miami in June. They aired on NBC News. One analyst tells VOA to expect more fireworks.
This may be the final chance for a lot of those 20 candidates to make their mark. And the way to do that is by mixing it up with the front runners, being aggressive, and really attacking them.
Biden has also come under attack for supporting a tough 1994 crime bill, which Harris says contributed to the mass incarceration of minorities. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker has echoed the charge, and trailing in the polls may revisit the question. Another analyst says voters want to hear about economic issues.
I think they need to focus on issues like health care or on education policy or on job creation.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who ranks second in most polls, is struggling to keep his lead over fellow progressive rival Elizabeth Warren, a senator from Massachusetts.
We need a presidential campaign which energizes and excites the American people.
The debate offers a chance for the candidates to speak directly to voters, as they will in coming months, in smaller events around the country. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Could your phone make you heavier? VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
The popularity of smartphones has been increasing, especially among young people. They are depending on these mobile devices for communicating with each other, catching up on the latest news and information, as well as entertainment. Studies conducted in recent years have provided evidence that increased smartphone use can be linked with reduced physical activity. A new study presented at the recent 2019 American College of Cardiology Latin America Conference suggests young people who use a smartphone for 5 or more hours a day have a 43% increased risk of obesity. The study authors found the young people they studied who use their smartphone for more than 5 hours each day are also most likely to have other lifestyle habits that boost the risk of cardiovascular disease, like having a diet of fast food, consuming drinks sweetened with sugar, and being less physically active. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. If you happen to be in Singapore and are listening on the radio, tune in to Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic. They carry our program every day. We thank them for that, and we say hello to everyone listening there. We also thank our director for today, Tracy Carter, engineer Cedric Franklin, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.